Thanks for joining us today at City Life. We believe today's message will empower you and point you towards Jesus. But remember that church is so much more than a message you listen to. It's a living, breathing community that we invite you to be a part of. We hope to see you on a Sunday morning at City Life, in person or online.
Anyway, if I haven't met you yet, I'm Joy. And we are continuing on this series, Jesus Freaks. And last week, my husband JD started us off talking about the martyr mindset, which is, I believe in and will follow Jesus above all else, no matter the cost. You know, that mindset that can help us in tough times. And just, you know, the decision to follow Jesus is the greatest decision any of us could ever make with our life. But there is a cost, and there will be a cost at some point for all of us. The cost might be your friends or your family, your comfort, your reputation. And throughout this series, we are looking at some different stories of the martyrs, maybe some from the early church or throughout church history, people who paid the ultimate price in following Jesus. And these stories, they seem so foreign to our modern North American mindset. Like, we do everything possible to live as long as possible, right? We take the supplements. We go to the doctors. We treat the diseases. We wear our seatbelts and live in Alberta where safety is like. You can't play on a playground the wrong way. You know, we got to do everything the safest possible way. That's our modern North American mindset. So these stories of people who gave their life for the gospel can seem so foreign to us. But in these stories, there is such beauty. Whether they gave their life in following Jesus, maybe for the preservation of the scriptures or for preaching the gospel, or simply just standing and saying, I am a Christian and I won't offer sacrifices to idols. I won't give in to these corrupt pagan laws that are forcing me to go against my faith. You know, these stories can be very impacting for us. And there's so many. I forgot to bring my book. We have there's the Jesus Freaks book 1 and 2. And there's so many great little short stories of different people who gave their life. I want to tell the story today of Perpetua and her friends. If you haven't heard of Perpetua, she lived in Carthage, which is like modern-day Tunisia in North Africa. And her friends were killed for their faith in the arenas at Carthage. So Perpetua was 22 years old. She was a wealthy aristocrat. She was educated. And during her imprisonment, she actually wrote a diary that was later finished by an eyewitness of her death. So this is one of the most well-documented martyrdom accounts, and also one of the earliest writings by a Christian female author that has survived antiquity. So her diary recounts some of the details of the events, information about a few of the other prisoners, and here's her story. So she was arrested with a few others while taking a baptism class in the year 202 AD. She was a new convert, we guess, based on that, so ready to get baptized. And initially, when she was put under house arrest, her father, who was not a Christian but was a wealthy aristocratic leader in the Roman society, he tried to convince her to save herself. He just said, just deny it. Just say you're not a Christian. And it's fine. You can have your own personal faith, but don't let it hinder your life. And her response says, you know, Father, do you see that vase there? Could it be called by any other name than what it is? Wow. No. And neither can I be called anything other than what I am. I am a Christian. So this Christian young woman arrested for her faith was also a nursing mother. She had an infant son, and when her and the friends were taken to the prison, she actually bribed the guards, and her whole group was moved to a better area of the prison so that she could have her infant son there so he could continue nursing. While they waited for her trial, she wrote of the pressures of motherhood, the fear that she had about the fate of her child. She recounts the struggle that she had with the darkness and the heat and the discomfort that she felt in prison. She was resolute in her faith in Jesus, but wrote about an internal wrestle that she felt between her faith in Jesus and the pressure she was under from her family to recant, but also the pressures of her family responsibilities that she felt she had as well. She wrote of some other prisoners. So one of them, his name was Saturnus, and he was the one who was discipling them. And he wasn't arrested, but when he heard that those he was leading to the Lord were arrested, he actually turned himself in so he might suffer alongside those that he had led to the Lord. Another one of the prisoners, her name was Felicitas, and she was a slave, and she was also pregnant when she was arrested. Now, there was a law forbidding the execution of a pregnant woman. So she prayed that God would cause her child to be born early enough so that she could suffer alongside her fellow Christians. And the baby was born a month premature while in prison. Perpetua recorded the story. While she was in labor, while Felicitas was in labor, the guards were taunting her. So you think you're in pain right now. What do you think you're going to feel like in the arena? Mocking her for her faith. Making fun of her while she's in labor. Just low.
That's low.
But her response was astounding. She says, "Now I suffer what I suffer. It is what it is. But another, Jesus, will be in me who will suffer for me because I too will be suffering for him." So I just think she's made this interesting connection that while she was suffering in labor to bring about new life with her child, Christ in her would suffer for her as she was brought in to new life, eternal life. So these other prisoners, they were partners. There were men and women and slaves and wealthy people, and they all encouraged each other. And as the day of the trial approached, Perpetua's father tried again. He came to visit her in prison and pleaded passionately, "Have pity on my gray hair," he said. "Have pity on me, your father. If I deserve to be called your father." He threw himself down before her, kissed her hands. "Think of your brothers. Think of your mother, your aunt, your child who will not be able to live once you are gone. Give up your pride." He thought it was just pride, but tried to convince her to give up her faith. And she tried to comfort her father, but she remained unshaken. She said, "It will all happen at the prisoner's dock as God wills, for you may be sure that we are not left to ourselves, but are in his power." And she sent her son home to be cared for by her family. The day of the hearing arrived, and Perpetua and her friends were marched before the governor, Hilarianus. And while Perpetua was questioned, her father burst into the room again, carrying the son. This is the, like, ultimate family guilt trip over and over and over again. Holding her son, "Please perform the sacrifice. Just have pity on your baby." The governor was like, "Oh, have pity on your father. This is your chance. Have pity on your infant son. Just offer the sacrifice. It's just for the welfare of the emperor." But her reply was, "I will not. I am a Christian." And her father interrupted again, and the governor had heard enough and had him beaten into silence. He then condemned Perpetua and her friends to die in the arena. And then, as record has it, on March 7th, 2003 AD, the day of the emperor's son's birthday, they were brought to the arena as part of the festivities. Perpetua and Felicitas were actually stripped naked because they refused to be dressed as pagan goddesses. They were given nets to wear. And they entered the stadium, wild beasts roaming the arena, the crowds roaring for blood. And a wild heifer charged the group. Perpetua was tossed into the air. She landed on her back. And as the animals continued to, like, kick at them and trample them, Perpetua actually got up and took a moment to bind up her hair. And one commentary said that hair let down was a sign of grieving. But she wasn't grieving. She was going to meet her death with as much dignity as possible. And so she fixed her hair and then went to help her friend. They survived the animal attack, and the crowd grew restless. And so the surviving Christians were gathered, and each of them were stabbed with a sword. But the gladiator who was assigned to kill Perpetua hesitated. He was inexperienced, and while being ordered to kill him, probably for many reasons, maybe was a little nervous. But she took hold of the tip of the sword, brought it to her own throat, and steadied him as he killed her. Her final words that she wrote to her family were, Do not be ashamed of my death. I think it is the greatest honor of my life, and I thank God for calling me to give my life for his sake and for his cause. What a story, hey? 22, noble birth, wealthy, fine family, education, intelligence, but none of these things, not even the love of her child, compared to the love and devotion she had for Christ. You know, you'll notice as you read many of the accounts of the martyrs, these were not hateful people protesting, angry at the man, resisting the government. Like, they were just deeply loving. They knew where love comes from, and they stood firm in their convictions, and they didn't yield to the pressure. And many of the stories, they modeled the love of Christ even to those who were sent to kill them. I just love her firm conviction, her unwavering faith. You know, in the book, Jesus Freaks, there's a quote. It says, the purpose of this book is not to try and explain away the deaths of the martyrs, but to honor their conviction, commitment, and faith, and to build yours. Each of us must follow Jesus for ourselves. You may never have to face the decision of whether or not to die for your faith, but every day you face the decision of whether or not you will live for it. How many of you have ever faced hostility since becoming a Christian? Would you put up your hand? You faced hostility since becoming a Christian. Maybe it's a family member who just didn't understand. Maybe you faced mockery in a public arena like work or university, school. You know, sometimes our friends and family don't understand our devotion or the decisions we make. They try and convince us otherwise. You know, some people have praying grandmothers. But I had a grandmother, one of my earliest memories of her. I was 4 years old. I had gone to spend the night. And I reached out to grab her hands to pray for dinner, as was our custom. And she smacked my hand. She said, "You do not pray in my house." You know, this was definitely a point of disagreement between my parents and my grandma. My parents were first-generation Christians. Both of them came to Christ alongside a couple other relatives, but they were the first in their family. And they had to navigate many conversations with their family members who didn't understand or agree with their decisions. I asked them, how did that work out? And they said they were kind and they were firm. And I knew my grandma loved me. We didn't really do sleepovers much after that point, actually. I knew my grandma loved me, but our faith was something she didn't like at all. And as a family, we prayed for her and our other family members. Every Friday, we prayed for family salvations at breakfast. And she passed away when I was a teenager. And the good news is she did come to faith in her final years, which as number of people that I've known, she was the last one I would have ever expected. But she came to faith, and I'm so grateful for answered prayers. And that my parents didn't just cut her out or turn our back on her, but we continued to be kind and firm and stand our ground in our faith, but love her in the meantime. You know, maybe you haven't faced outright hostility, but I think all of us experience pressure on our faith in some way, shape, or form. You know, pressure is just kind of also part of life. It's learning, growing, experiencing challenges, learning how to handle pressure. But there is an extra pressure that can make living for Jesus and following him in difficult. There is a cost to following Jesus. Maybe it's the pressure. You feel the pressure to conform, to be like your friends, to change your values, to fit better into society. And maybe you feel a pressure on yourself to live out your faith while you're also struggling with your own faults and failures and questions. Maybe your family is putting pressure on you, or you're feeling pressure to be responsible for your family, to provide for your family financially, to put up with the pressures of a busy schedule and all of the things that come with the family responsibilities and obligations we have. Or maybe you're a teen and you have the normal pressure of what to do with your life. You know, what do I want to be when I grow up? But then we have that added pressure of what does God want me to be? Not just what do I want to do, what does my family want to do, but I want to follow Jesus and I don't know the direction to go. It can be paralyzing. You know, we have the pressures of parenting. Raising kids is tough. But then raising them to be a Christian as well. We want to instill those Christian values. We want to model our faith in a way that makes sense to them. You know, pressure isn't necessarily bad or wrong or a sign that anything is bad. Because in the midst of hard circumstances, sometimes people can just say the whole, but God will never give you more than you can handle. How many of you have ever heard that? You know, people who say this usually are trying to encourage us, but that's not actually scripture, really at all. And I don't know about you, but I don't think it's all that helpful either. So what do we do when the pressure is more than we can handle? Do we pretend? Just everything's fine. Just push through it. But how long can we last at that? Just avoid it, numb it, distract it away. Don't think about it. Because if you don't think about it, it's not there, right? Or like, you know that song in Encanto, pressure like a drip, 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 till it just goes pop and you just burst because it's just going everywhere. And burn out like anyone else, like pop your lid and lose it when it's just a bit much. Or maybe we take a step back and take the easier route. But as Mike mentioned before, Jesus never promised us ease and comfort. He said, in this world, you will have trouble. And then the disciples who obeyed Jesus' direction to go into all the world, they faced opposition and hardships the entire way. And so I want to look at what a few of the disciples had to say. And I hope that these verses can encourage us to keep going through whatever pressure you might be facing. And in these scriptures, we can also find, what do we do when it is all just too much? So the Apostle Peter said in 1 Peter 1:3-5, what a God we have. And how fortunate we are to have him, this father of our master Jesus. Because Jesus was raised from the dead, we've been given brand new life and have everything to live for, including a future in heaven. And the future starts now. God is keeping careful watch over us and the future. And the day is coming when you will have it all, a life healed and whole. So Peter reminds us that in the time when the day-to-day is too much, there will be a day when all things will be made new. All things will be made right. God's justice will reign. All suffering will end. And this perspective is what really was a very real reality for Perpetua and her friends. But we need to remember some of the pressure we feel is so temporary. And we need to remember the eternal. And he goes on to say, I know how great this makes you feel, even though you have to put up with every kind of aggravation in the meantime. That doesn't sound so good. But pure gold put into the fire comes out of it proved pure. Genuine fire put through this suffering comes out proved genuine. When Jesus wraps this all up, it's your faith, not your gold, that God will have on display as evidence of his victory. Our faith is more pure and more genuine through pressure when we let that refining process do its work in us. You know, the good thing is, if there is anything redemptive, if there is anything good that could come from the hard stuff we face, if anyone could make something good come from that, it is our good and faithful Father who loves us. That hostility, put up with every kind of aggravation. You know, we don't want to miss out on the refining moments because we hid or because we just distracted ourselves from it. Let it do its work in us. The Apostle James said in James 1:2-4, don't run from tests and hardships, brothers and sisters. as difficult as they are, you will ultimately find joy in them. You know, this, I definitely do have a soft heart for people going through hardship, and I really don't mean this to be oversimplistic or, to overlook the real emotional suffering that we can feel through hardship. So please hear this. This is Apostle James. He was a brother of Jesus. He came to faith in a time where it was dangerous to give his life. And this is not meant to just sweep over pain and suffering, but to tell us what to do with it. As difficult as they are, you will ultimately find joy in them. If you embrace them, your faith will blossom under the pressure and teach you true patience as you endure. And true patience brought on by endurance will equip you to complete the long journey, cross the finish line, mature, complete, and wanting nothing. If you do not have all the wisdom you need for this journey, then all you have to do is ask God for it, and God will grant you all that you need, because he gives lavishly and never scolds you for asking. You know, he gives us wisdom if we ask him. You know, I think it's good to ask God, is this pressure I'm feeling because I have a lack of wisdom? Do I need more wisdom in my finances? Do I need more wisdom to manage the busy schedule? Do I need more wisdom? Because he will give us what we ask. God is able to give us strength to endure, to help us to create new healthy habits. Like we already sang, that's to be still. To have those times with stillness before God, to have those times of simple, quiet rest. You know, sometimes in the midst of the busy, it's hard to carve out time for that, but God will give us the wisdom on how to make it work. And that can bring such maturity to our life. A different translation says, consider it a sheer gift, friends. A sheer gift. When tests and challenges come at you from all sides, you know that under pressure, your faith life is forced out into the open and shows its true colors. So don't try to get out of anything prematurely. Let it do its work so that you can become mature, well-developed, and not deficient in any way. You know, sometimes the worst thing we can do is try and pull back and just figure it out on our own. Allow the pressure to do its work. This is when our faith life is forced out into the open. Pressure can reveal where we are really putting our faith. Where is our hope and trust? Is it in ourselves? Is it in our family, our wealth, our education, our busyness, our importance? Is it in who we think we are? Or like Perpetua and her friends, was it truly in God alone? The Apostle Paul said, we don't want you in the dark, friends, about how hard it was when all of this came down on us in Asia province. It was so bad, we didn't think we were going to make it. We felt like we'd been sent to death row, and it was all over for us. And as it turned out, it was the best thing that could have happened. Instead of trusting in our own strength or wits to get out of it, we were forced to trust in God totally. And not a bad idea, since he's the God who raises the dead. When there is pressure all around, ask yourself, am I relying on anything that I shouldn't be relying on? Am I relying on my own strength or wits? Or can I allow this pressure to put my faith totally in God? Because there's no way I'm getting through this without you. There is an aspect of knowing God and his empowering presence, his spirit, that we only reach out for. We only know it in desperate times. So what do we do when the pressure is so much more than you can handle? Don't deny it. Don't run from it or distract it or let it build up till it bursts. Pour out your heart before God. What I mean by that is name the pressure you feel. Identify the way it makes you feel. Identify those emotions and express that to God in prayer. I am feeling the pressure, God, and I'm not handling it well. Now, I am definitely not saying just pray more. This is the formula. You will never have problems again. Nor am I saying if you're experiencing problems is evidence you aren't praying enough. Absolutely not. But what I am saying is meet God. Meet him in the pressure. Be honest before God. Meet him in the moments of pressure and hardship and torment. This is a form of prayer called lament, where we pour out our prayers, our cries, our deepest pressures for God, before God. We pour out our failures and our stress and our worries, our inadequacies, our hurts, our questions, our pain, and we ask God, what can you do through this? What are you able to accomplish through this? Because 2 Corinthians 1, 3-5, he comes alongside us. This is the most beautiful promise. He comes alongside us when we go through hard stuff. And before you know it, he brings us alongside someone else who is also going through hard times so that we can be there for that person just as God was there for us. We have plenty of hard times that come from following the Messiah, but no more so than the good times of his healing comfort. We get a full measure of that too. Is there anyone else going through a hard time that I can comfort with the comfort I received? Would you stand with me? You know, even as I was talking about facing hostility and Perpetua's faith of saying, I am a Christian, regardless of the cost. You know, if you're thinking, I've messed up, I've definitely missed opportunities where I hid my faith. You know, I find a whole lot of hope in Peter's story, where Peter, the disciple who denied Christ 3 times, and yet Jesus offered him another chance. He offered him his forgiveness, his restoration, and renewed purpose. You know, with God, our failure is not final. And so when it is so much more than we can handle, I believe God will give us all the grace we need in every situation. You know, there is a different kind of pressure, a pressure that comes from doing it your own way, the pressure of guilt and sin, the pressure we feel when we're far from God. And this is a pressure that is we're not meant to carry. It's not a good kind of pressure that would just, you know, make diamonds. This is the kind of pressure that crushes. And the psalmist described it this way. He says, when I kept it all inside, my bones turned to powder. My words became day-long groans. The pressure never let up, and all the juices of my life dried up. Then I let it all out. I said, I'll come clean about my failures to God. And suddenly the pressure was gone. My guilt dissolved, my sin disappeared. The gift of salvation, the gift of Jesus, it costs us nothing. Jesus paid the entire cost with his life. He exchanges our failures for his goodness. He exchanges our failures for forgiveness. Guilt, what did it say? Guilt dissolved, sin disappeared. It's immediate. Jesus dealt with it already. You just need to know it's already gone. All you have to do is receive the gift that he has given. Jesus paid the entire cost with his life, but as I've spoken of, following Jesus in your life eventually costs us all something. If you're here and you're not a believer, in a moment we're going to pray together, and it's a prayer really just accepting the gift of his forgiveness, his grace, his mercy, his courage, his power to make you brand new. And we want to invite you to pray with us because we're all going to pray together. But this prayer saying yes, a divine exchange takes place in a prayer, in a heart that it just says, I don't want this guilt, I don't want this shame, I don't want this sin, I don't want my failures chasing me and condemning me with every thought. He wants to change that with his life, with the gift of his life. So would you pray with me? Say, Father, thank you for the gift of your son, for the gift of new life. Jesus, I believe in you, in your death, in your resurrection, and that you want to make me brand new. Thank you for paying the ultimate cost and for giving me your grace and your forgiveness. Make me brand new. I choose to follow you, no matter the cost. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope today's message encouraged you. If you want to take your next step in saying yes to Jesus, you can always contact us at cty.lc/next step or fill out the Next Step section on the City Life app. It's an honor to play a small part in what God is doing in your life. We look forward to connecting with you soon.